Hey guys, what's going on? You're listening to Nerd News, and I am not Mike the Birdman Dodd. Birdman's had a rough go of it for the last few weeks, so if you could, send him some love at mike@thisweekingeek.net. Send him some best wishes, tell him to get back soon so you don't have to listen to me. I am Ryan the Uneven Flow, and I am taking over for this week. Which is interesting, because if I remember right, I was part of the inaugural version of Nerd News way back when it was multiple hosts, and I actually had people to bounce things off of instead of sitting here and talking to myself, which is a lot more daunting, but I'm kind of used to it, so whatever. So, yeah, there's your intro. Mike frequently tells people what he's been up to, but I haven't been up to anything, and nobody really knows me or really cares, so let's just get on with it. So I kind of wanted to start off with something a little different. There's an article about sort of geek fandom that's been making the rounds, and deservedly so. It's definitely worth a read. It's called Fandom is Broken. The article's hosted on birthmoviesdeath.com. That's all one word, birthmoviesdeath, and then .com, obviously. Came out on the 30th of May. And it's an interesting article. I think probably most of you listening to this and an awful lot of people have already read it. I'm not sure everyone gets it. And I kind of wanted to break that down a bit because I really feel like it applies to a few of the stories I wanted to get to today that, is stuff that's going on right now in nerd culture as well. So, I mean, the article in a lot of ways was just an article discussing the fact that there's an awful lot of hate in nerd culture right now. And the top three stories I have today kind of deal with it in different ways. One of them is not necessarily a story, just a commentary on some of the stuff involving Ghostbusters. I really don't want to get into that, so that's going to be a quick one. Then there's the Captain America reveal of, Cap being a Hydra agent all this time, and yeah, I'll get into that more. And the delay on No Man's Sky, which is an exceptionally promising looking game that was due out rather soon, actually. I think it was due out in June, and it's been kicked back a couple months, and people went nuts. So yeah, this all ties together, I promise, somehow. So let's get to it. Now, the idea of hate in nerd culture is nothing new. It's really been happening a lot lately. A lot of the gatekeeping, as it's called, is in the concept of, you're not a real fan of blank because blank. I'm a Transformers fan, so let's use that as an example. You're not a real fan of Transformers unless you've watched the Generation 1 cartoon. Or the concept that you have to do something in order to be a true fan. That's an example of gatekeeping, and to a lesser extent, an example of hate. And stuff like that's been happening a lot more. But it seems like the hate's become more active. And Ghostbusters is up there because I wanted to use it as an example. Now, whether or not you think the movie will be good, or whether or not you like it or whatever, is almost independent of this. My issue with it, and one of the things that this article is getting at, is there's an irrational amount of hate delivered to it. There is no way anyone can tell me with a straight face that the trailers for it are the worst trailers of all time, or the worst videos on YouTube of all time. It's not even close. And let's be honest here, for the people who are complaining that, I'm not going to see it because the trailers are bad, have any of you ever watched a Michael Bay movie? Because you're pretty much immediately a hypocrite if that happened. I mean, has Bay released a trailer that seems promising or like any of his movies are going to be good? And this is aside from the fact that, his movies are never actually good. And the opposite's true of some other ones. Zack Snyder makes great trailers. They always look really good, and I think they do an excellent job of hyping people up to see his movies. And then the movies come out, and you watch them, and yeah. Talk about style over substance, but, Bay is an example of that too. In any case, getting back to the point here, it's not deserving of the hatred it's getting. And I think independent of the whole MRA versus everyone else, or misogyny arguments that have been done to death, and for the record, I think a lot of the hate around it is not based on misogyny. Certainly there is some, I've seen it, but certainly not all of it. There are people who just don't like it based on the trailers, and the point of, or point I'm trying to make, and I think the point the article was trying to make, is that that's not right either. I mean, you can hate it or dislike the trailer, and that's fine, but if you're going to close your mind off of it based on a two-minute clip that the network or a series of people decided would suit you or make you want to see the movie, or they decided for you this is what you should see, that's not keeping a very open mind, we'll say. I also don't think it's a particularly good point of view to have in life. One of the examples I use is, there last year there were two movies that I absolutely dreaded and didn't want to see. And for anyone who doesn't know this, I'm just going to mention it now. I have different online personas. Ryan the Uneven Flow, actually the real, my real name, everything else. My writer names do not write under those, and I'm never going to tell any of you or anyone what they are. But one of them gets to vote on Oscars. And two of the movies I was dreading most last year were Mad Max Fury Road and Creed. I had no interest in either, and the trailers didn't do anything to sort of make me fall in love with them either. Well, turns out I was wrong, because I went and saw both of them, because, you know, I had to, it's kind of my job. And in the end, I would be pushing for both of them to get into the Oscars, now for different categories each, and some different things. But regardless, I was allowed to be surprised by something that I was fairly certain I wasn't going to enjoy. Now, my case is a little different. Again, it's my job to go to see these, and it's my job to see them with as open a mind as possible. But, you know, if you haven't experienced the sensation of going to see something and being really pleasantly surprised or even absolutely blown away by the quality of something within that, in the case of those two, you know, Mad Max, I'd just say the overall film just absolutely blew me away, loved it. And in the case of Creed, Michael B. Jordan's performance was amazing and definitely worth a watch. I was also really surprised by Sylvester Stallone. But anyway, you know, the fact I had to go see them, I ended up being really pleasantly surprised, and that's a great feeling. It's something that I think you deny yourself if you're going to go into something, A, sure you're going to hate it, or B, knowing or just never bothering to see it at all. And if you just stay within your wheelhouse, I guess that's okay, but it's something that we've talked about on different shows with Mike and I and Andrew and other people. That is that sometimes people just need to leave their wheelhouse and try different things. Now, in the case of Ghostbusters, again, I'll say I've seen some valid reasons to not want to see it, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And the people who are getting attacked because they don't want to see it for valid reasons, you know, valid reasons I would say are, I'm just not a fan of reboots, that's okay. I, you know, really didn't enjoy the trailer, and if there's a lot of other things I'd rather get to, that's also all right. But if you're simply just going to say, I hate the trailer, I don't care, I'll never see it no matter what, that's a really closed-minded viewpoint, and I don't think it's conducive to good fandom. Fandom should generally be inclusive, and the people who especially are attacking other people for enjoying aspects of it or being interested in it, that's completely the wrong way to go. I mean, one of the appeals of nerd culture, especially in the 90s, was the fact that it was exceptionally inclusive. That's really changed in the last few years. It is not exceptionally inclusive, and people are openly derided for liking certain things or not liking other things. That's not how it should go. Now, as this applies to Captain America, alright, so, Captain America, as I'm sure every single person listening to this knows, it was revealed that Cap was a Hydra plant all along, and secretly working for Hydra all these years. Alright, I've read the issue. I mean, it's not bad. It's set up a lot by the past, I don't know how many at this point, quite a few issues of Captain America leading up to this point. And that's kind of one of the points I wanted to make, too, that I think you probably shouldn't be commenting if you haven't read Cap in years and years, and this is what you know. I mean, there was some build-up to this. Was it great? I would personally say no, but I'm also curious about where this is going to go, and that's kind of the other issue I wanted to make, and that is, it's the first issue. Give something a chance. Like, give us a chance for the story to play out. Instead, you've got people sending death threats to the author, and really oddly enough, Ed Brubaker received a ton of death threats. He hasn't written Captain America in 5 years. He had nothing to do with this. The hell? At least get your targets right if you're going to be a moron and just randomly shoot people death threats. Which, by the way, critic me gets all the time. Anyway, so the Captain America reveal has also inspired an awful lot of hate. And, man, an awful lot of people who apparently don't read or don't pay attention to this stuff very often. I mean, Hydra, first of all, is not the Nazis. They didn't even really get along with the Nazis, and pretty clearly were going to off them the first chance they got. They were just a means to the end for Hydra. Second of all, Cap has openly worked for the Nazis in the past. Now, granted, there was some Fred Flintstone-esque brainwashing or forgetting things or memory manipulation, but it's happened more than once. I can remember two off the top of my head, and I'd wager that I've probably forgotten one or two as well. And for the people who are saying, well, the creators wouldn't be cool with this or this revelation, well, they were when it happened originally, so yeah, I'm not sure that carries a lot of weight. I mean, one of the good things about comic books is while there is a fluidity to it, and you can do things like this storyline or the really excellent Superior Spider-Man storyline where Dr. Octopus took over Peter Parker's body, and that was, by the way, I mean, that was a really derided first issue, and in the end, the payoff was definitely worth it. That was a really good series, one of the better Spider-Man stories in full in a long time. So, you know, maybe this turns out the same way, but in any case, I think they need to have the time to tell the story. And again, that's one of the good things about comics. You can do these changes, but in the end, at some point, the hero or villain or character, period, gets moved back to where they were in order for the next creator to start over with their own take on the character. For anyone who doesn't know, I'm a big fan of The Punisher. The Punisher has been subject to some of the worst comic runs in history. Matt Fraction's dreadful run. Angelic Punisher, which, oh, jeez. Stuff like the time he thought he was a mob boss. Or the more recent Edmondson run, which was also not good. But in each case, the character was stopped and restarted and essentially, you know, started off in a new place for the next creator. Now, some of those, you know, Angel Punisher being one of the worst, that would end up resulting in Garth Ennis's outstanding Welcome Back, Frank. So, yeah, even if you don't like this Captain America story, don't worry about it. A, maybe there's some people who do like it, and they're allowed to like something you don't like. And B, just wait until, I don't know, the next creative team takes over, and guess what? They'll start off, it'll basically be your Cap again, and, you know, you get to see what they do with it. I mean, it's one of the good things and bad things. There's certainly some negatives with that. I mean, the story's never going to end. It's not like an independent publisher's story or something like that. But, again, the bright side is you get to have all these stories with this character. Some of them you're going to like, some of them you won't like. And I think the overall quality, this is a bigger issue, and I'm getting away from the whole, you know, nerd or hate in nerd culture article, but I think some of the issue, too, has been the overall quality of comics is outstanding in this past decade or so. It's really been incredible since about 2000. We've had a number of really great new writers come up, and a lot of the classic writers are still around and still writing really good work. And then the independent stuff has just been knocking it out of the park as well. So I think the fact that people get this upset over a run that maybe they're not interested in is more indicative of the fact that the overall quality has been great. I mean, you know, Cap's a great example. Brubaker wrote Captain America for 8 years and had some of the best stories ever. And I mean, a lot of that stuff is what we see on screen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So to have to follow that up with anything, you pretty much have to make a splash. Now, whether or not you agree with what they're doing now, 5 years after Brubaker's gone, again, to each his own, but I'm interested in seeing where it goes. I'm going to give the writers the benefit of the doubt. If it turns out poor, then, like I say, guess what? They're going to start over, going to be a new team, and Captain America will be back to normal. But in any case, the writers deserve the opportunity to tell the story. Whether you think it's cheap or that kind of thing, it's still, you still kind of have to wait to see how it plays out. This is comic books, after all. There's about a million different ways that this could go. So, yeah. And the next on our Hate Train O stories, No Man's Sky, the excellent, I don't even know how to describe this game. It's a in-space flying game that essentially generates as you play and is looking fantastic. And it was going to see a PS4 PC release, but got delayed. Now, the whole reason I'm bringing this up and it goes in the hate aspect is Kotaku, famously, one of their employees got a single death threat on Twitter. I'm sure they probably got more, but anyway, they only posted one. And more notably, the game developers got absolutely bombarded with rage, hate, whatever you want to call it. Again, on Twitter, email, different outlets. And yeah, that's not the best way to express your disappointment at a game being delayed. Also, as a side note, wouldn't you want it to be delayed if you're a big fan, rather than, I don't know, releasing a buggy, incoherent mess, Bethesda, every game you've ever released? Curse them. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, this was another example. I'm really looking forward to this game, by the way. It looks fantastic. The concept of a game that essentially generates while you play is really interesting. There's a number of, you know what, just go search for No Man's Sky. Really curious to play it. I haven't had a chance to play any of the early versions of it or go to any of the events for it, but it would be really nice to. I like how it's looking so far. I agree with people being disappointed. I don't agree with people threatening developers or talking about, you know, committing suicide because it's delayed or things like that. It's sad, excessive for a video game, comic book, or movie trailer. In the end, you know, there's too much hate in nerd culture right now. And people need to calm down and remember what it is they liked about it. And I feel like it's gotten worse in the last little bit. Batman Superman was kind of an early tipping point. And to give you some context, I mean, reviewer me did not score that film particularly positively, we'll say. But as things that are worth seeing, and I know a ton of people that absolutely loved it, so you know what? Go see it. I mean, it's a movie I recommended seeing, even though I didn't give it a great score. The reason being, there were sequences that were worth watching, and there are aspects of it that I think most people are going to enjoy. It was not a wholly irredeemable film. And in that case, you know, not wholly irredeemable means there were some things I liked about it. You know what? There's probably a lot of things other people liked about it. But for whatever reason, in the last little bit, it's become taboo to like something that nobody else likes, and vice versa. You're not supposed to hate things that everybody else likes, and then they just jump all over you, and you argue on the internet, which, by the way, is a severely pointless exercise. Add in some other factors with some of these. Ghostbusters, I think there's an awful lot of nostalgia. I'm going to say this as nicely as possible. We're not talking about Citizen Kane being remade here. Ghostbusters is an enjoyable film with a fairly limited scope in terms of what it wanted to achieve. It is probably also weighted against the fact that, to be blunt, the 80s were a cultural wasteland. By the way, that's something that in a upcoming special or one of our monthly sort of discussions on This Week in Geek is going to be pitting the decades of our lives against each other. You can guess I do not view the 80s particularly well. I lived it. Again, it's not exactly a great time for culture. I think there's a reason there's not an awful lot of stuff that came out of it and has endured. And a lot of the stuff that has endured maybe should not have, because people remember all the really good Ninja Turtle stories and exciting things from that. People have forgotten all of the terrible live-action stuff, or the sing-alongs, or the appearances on TV, or, alright, I've had enough of bringing this stuff out of my memory, which I've tried to repress all these years. In any case, with Ghostbusters, I think, because it came from an era where there's not nearly as many sort of classic or top-flight films, it gets weighted a little more, and it gets, you know, propped up, and people seem to have forgotten that it already had a sequel, and that was not very good. I mean, to be blunt, you're talking about a movie franchise that has roughly the same success rate as the Highlander films, which had one good one and then a whole lot of god-awful. Highlander 5, The Source, I believe, is still my worst-reviewed film, which is saying something, because I've seen the Transformers movies. In any case, I mean, Ghostbusters is a fun movie, but we're not talking about remaking something like Back to the Future, which I think is a lot closer to an untouchable classic. And having said that, I mean, Kumail Nanjiani pointed out really well the other day that you don't own this stuff. And it's unfortunate in some ways that as a race, we tend to try to kind of take ownership of the things we like. We don't actually own any of this stuff, and people are free to do the stories with them that maybe we don't like. And I kind of got into that with the comics as well, too. The good part about all of this is it doesn't, A, erase the stories that you do like. Case in point, I mean, like I said before, I'm a huge Transformers fan. I don't know if I made it really clear, but I'm not a huge fan of the Bay franchise of movies, the toys that came out with them, or, well, a lot of it, really. But it didn't erase the old stuff, and it doesn't replace the comics that I really, really enjoy from IDW right now. And that's the perfect segue, and it's a perfect setup, because this is something I'm not excited about, but maybe there are people who are, and, you know, more power to you, and I'm going to wait to see how it turns out. And that is today's announcement that IDW is going to merge their comic book universes. IDW owns the rights to a number of 80s properties, and they're merging G.I. Joe, Rom the Space Knight, Micronauts, which I only barely remember, Action Man, which I don't remember at all, and Mask with their Transformers universe. Now, the issue I have with it is the Transformers universe is really good. More Than Meets the Eye is one of the few comics I absolutely cannot wait and end up reading Wednesday morning when the Comixology download is finished, and I get up early. So, the idea of it being interfered with, now I'm not sure More Than Meets the Eye will be affected as much as the main series from John Barber, which has been solid, but Hasbro's insistence on using current toy lines is starting to get annoying. In any case, it kind of interferes with that because the narrative doesn't support a lot of this stuff. I don't want to get into it, but there have been past events that are pretty much going to have to be either ignored or completely retconned from the ground up to support the idea of a G.I. Joe or Mask necessarily existing at this point. In any case, I kind of want to wait to see, you know, is this just going to be sort of a cameo book every once in a while? Are there going to be just be references? I don't know. It's a neat little idea of making sort of a shared universe of all the 80s properties that IDW has, although they left out the non-Hasbro stuff and some Hasbro stuff that they do own, but eh, hey, can't jam it all in there. It's interesting. I guess that's all I have to say about it. I don't hate it. First article? Fine. Lastly, I mean, Mike ends with a review. I'm just going to do a couple quick ones because I've been on. I have no idea what he's been reviewing. I just haven't had time. Sorry, folks. For quick reviews, I mean, Overwatch came out earlier. It is a blast. I've been playing that since beta. I highly recommend anybody who's got a really good internet connection and the ability to play it, so in other words, new consoles or PC, to give it a shot. If you like shooters, play it. If you like multiplayer, play it. If you like multiplayer shooters, play it. And if you like any sort of team-based or co-op stuff, it's a must-play. It's fantastic, and I like what Blizzard's doing with it. They're kind of doing the Team Fortress 2 approach, which is patching, tweaking, and working on it after release, keeping things balanced. I'm really enjoying it. It's going to be tough for me in terms of, is it my game of the year so far? It's certainly up there. XCOM 2 is kicking around in that area as well. There's a ton of games coming out this year. Uncharted 4 was fantastic. I don't know. Anyway, on to the not as good stuff. Two movies. I've already seen the Warcraft movie. Well, so much for a good video game movie. I mean, it's just not good. I mean, the CGI, I'm not certain we're in a place where CGI can replace actors yet. And, you know, we marveled at the leap forward by technology with Avatar. There's not much to marvel at here. Like Avatar, it's let down by a flat story. It has some good visuals, but it's got some really not good visuals. And to be blunt, there's some poor acting afoot as well, too. So, I don't know. Warcraft is a world that it feels like is ripe for maybe television or maybe a film franchise, but this is not a good start. And it makes me sad because I really like Duncan Jones. I think he's a great director, but this was a misstep. I'm not sure there's a lot that can be done to fix it. So, I don't know. If Blizzard's looking at creating sort of their own cinematic universe, it's a rough start. Although, you know, we've seen that with a couple others as well. And lastly, another quick review, X-Men Apocalypse, a film I didn't hate, but I also didn't like. It is the definition of a 5 out of 10 movie. It doesn't fail to do anything, but it doesn't really succeed at anything either. It just kind of is. There are some okay action set pieces, but there's nothing more spectacular than we've seen before. And unfortunately, the story is not bad, but it's let down heavily because Oscar Isaac's Apocalypse is not an interesting villain whatsoever. And we've seen the Marvel movies overcome that with having some good action or some good or fun characterization. This movie doesn't have time to give anyone much of any characterization. There's a couple of characters that come off well, but for the most part, it's kind of the same problem the X-Men movies have gotten later on, and, you know, most notably Last Stand, in that there's too many characters to give enough time to, there's too many characters to really care about, and an underdeveloped villain is really an issue here, which Last Stand didn't have, because, I mean, Magneto was one of the villains, and we already knew him, etc., etc. So, I don't know, is it worth watching? I'd say so, especially if you're a fan. You'll enjoy some of the character moments, and, you know, a lot of them are pretty much just cameos at this point. There's very little to no dialogue for some of the characters, even ones we've seen in the trailers. So, yeah, it was kind of disappointing. I don't know. I don't know if I hope that Bryan Singer takes another chance or gets another shot at the series, or it sounds like he's going to take a step away, and at this point, I think I'm okay with that. So yeah, that's nerd news this week. Hopefully Mike will be back soon. If not, well, you're stuck with me again. Feel free to send Mike some feedback on this. You can tell him to fire my ass, that's fine. You can tell him to hire me or bring me on with him more often or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, the address for that is mike@thisweekingeek.net. And yeah, that is all.